Today with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. It's Smug Tony Simpson, and I'll at this point, without sounding smug, I'll say hello Jack Bennion.
Hello BRC4 class winning driver Tony Simpson.
Awkward. Hello Ryan Champion.
Hello Tony Simpson. Did you win your class on the Scottish Rally?
I did, but we must add to that story straight away is that I was the only one there.
Rumour did pass that way. Yeah.
Sounds to me right, like he's being smug about it. What do you think?
Well, I think he is, isn't he? I mean, opening the show talking about it already.
Do you know what? I love the support that I get from my colleagues in the Absolute Rally podcast. I really do appreciate it. You know, one person calls me smug on Twitter and you guys jump on board and you take sides straight away. And no. You don't back your colleague. No. You go with the board on Twitter. Who could have been saying it tongue in cheek? I really don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe he does think I'm, and that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I hope he still enjoys the podcast. Maybe he just edits me out. I don't know. Maybe he just listens to Jack and Ryan. Wasn't the plan we had to start this podcast, it has to be said. So, boys, can we get back to rallying?
Absolutely. Carry on. We weren't talking about rallying.
We'll talk about the Scottish in a bit in my Any Other Business. That's my Any Other Business this week. I want to go straight to the headlines, boys. And as ever, we always talk headlines, and we always talk MN headlines. And I was privy to, I've got WRC Plus, which I think is fantastic, and I watched the Rally Poland preview last night, and it was going to be part of my Any Other Business. But to be fair, this headline, Jack, straight away, all eyes on Rally Poland safety. Talk to us about it.
It's one of those events we've talked about before on Absolute Rally, isn't it? One that is one yellow card away from being banned off the WRC calendar. So obviously the Rally Poland organisers are taking safety very seriously on this weekend's event. There's been a lot of extra spectator safety areas put up and lots of gates used instead of tape and all sorts of methods that the organisers are using to try and make the event more safe. And some of the drivers last year were pointing to people sat in ditches in dangerous positions after jumps and things like that. So, you know, it sounds like they've made a really good concerted effort to make sure that safety is paramount this year.
Right. When we're hearing stories that there's too many events for the calendar already, does this make life a lot easier for the FIA?
Well, it's something that they have to bear in mind, don't they? I mean, obviously, safety is always number one on the agenda nowadays. We already know next year's cars are going to be quicker than this year's cars, as we've talked about in previous episodes. So I guess, as ever, you know, safety is a number one priority. And in this day and age, more than any, they do have to keep on top of that.
I suppose in 2017 as well, and once another story which we bounce straight to is there's no privateers going to be in 2017 WRC cars. The super licensing that we've been discussing off and on probably for the last 6 months, it seems like, Jack. This story obviously broke last week. And I want to talk about Prokhorov a little bit later on anyway, but you start looking at it and you think, well, M Sport kind of do have privateers, but they can run under the M Sport banner and things like that. And then you look at what Toyota are going to do. You're looking at what Hyundai do. You look at what Citroen do. And you look at what Volkswagen do. Are we going to feel the pinch too much?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? There's definitely two sides of the coin. I guess on one side, if you look at this year, there's not been too many privateer entries. If you look back through WRC's history, I suppose it's been quite low over the past couple of years. But at the same time, you'd like them to have the opportunity to be there, wouldn't you? So it's definitely a double-edged sword for the WRC in terms of what they do with the regulation. I don't know what you guys sort of think about this in your opinions, but I don't like people being banned. I think that's always a step too far, really.
It's interesting. I suppose, right, I will listen to what you've got to say, but I'm going to put another question to you before that. Someone like Nasser Al-Attiyah, where would he fall?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely a good point now, because you would assume Nasser has got the experience and the ability to jump into a 2017 car. So you would certainly not want to see people like that stopped if they want to be in a World Rally car. As you've already said, you know, I think through M Sport, I'm sure we'll see, for want of a better description, privateers driving the third cars. But I guess this is what they're saying is a general thing about the 2017 regulations, that there won't be privateers in them next year. But where does that go going forward? We've already talked about M Sport being a commercial operation, and they need to sell these cars. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for the following year as well as just next year.
Just coming back to, I wanted to talk very briefly about Poland. I just want to jump back to that. Is the concerns, Jack, and obviously the story that David Evans wrote there, is the concerns about the average speed? Because that was one of the things that did also come about when I was watching that preview last night, that, you know, the average speeds, you know, I think it was Mads Osberg said, you know, you just leave your brain at home and it's just flat out.
Yeah, it's one of those rallies, Poland, isn't it? It's very flat out, and yeah, the average speeds are going to be pushed next year. They're talking about, you know, upwards of 400 brake horsepower in these new cars. So yeah, it could be an issue. I like where the FIA is going in terms of making sure that whoever gets in these cars is safe. But we've got to safeguard the future of the sport as well. And there's still got to be access for people to come into the sport, as you know, we can't just have the set of drivers we've got now, and that's WRC set, because, you know, obviously the next crop needs to come from somewhere.
Just coming on that one as well. But you know, we're talking about maybe three car teams next year, so that's understandable. There'll be the three 2017 cars, but presumably they're not going to stop the manufacturer running a fourth 2017 car.
No, there doesn't seem to be, you know, the statement that came out from the World Motorsport Council was very short and didn't sort of answer too many questions. But yeah, from anything that's come out so far, there's been nothing said about how many cars the manufacturers can run. So that's obviously the next point. And I think another quote we've got in the story is that obviously the drivers are still going to be assessed to see if they're eligible. So it still applies to the manufacturer teams, whether drivers are allowed into the car or not. That makes sense.
Well, again, we still haven't quite got to the bottom of what's going to happen. What we kind of termed earlier this year, or certainly a couple of months ago, WRC1 cars. Now, that still is, I suppose, an outside bet that there's going to be this other category that'll be brought in. And, you know, I suppose Prokhorov, if he can be persuaded to come back now, he's had that time penalty removed. Would people like him, would he fall into that? And Henning Solberg and those guys. But again, Henning falls into that category, you know, maybe not quite at the sharp end as perhaps, I don't know really. Is there much difference between him and Nasser Al-Attiyah? I don't know. What do you reckon, Roy?
In terms of, you know, assessing somebody's credibility to drive a 2017 car, I mean, how many World Championship rallies has Henning Solberg done? An awful lot of rallies in a top line car, and okay, just because he's not setting fastest times nowadays, I don't know how you could rule him out from driving a 2017 car if you had the budget to do it.
I don't know, but again, I want to jump to the next headline. Really, I want to go to this is one that I'm looking forward to. Obviously, Elvin Evans, we're going to talk about the Scottish very, very shortly. Elvin Evans, off the back of his win on Rally Scotland, on the Scottish, what we call the Scottish International. I don't know quite the proper term for it these days, but the Scottish International Rally anyway. WRC2 battle hots up as all drivers face off. So all the hot shots are there then, Jack.
Yeah, we've got pretty much everyone there. We've got the top seven in points, I think, in WRC2, and then we've also got Ezzy Pekkalappi, who's only done two events, so he's not quite in that top order of the points anyway. But yeah, it's one of them battles we've not seen yet so far this year on gravel. The whole of the WRC2 top, all the top guys all together. So it's going to be a great battle. There's not really much more to add to that, to be honest.
Yeah. As I say, I think it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, that story broke last week with regards to Elvin looking towards, you know, his future and being back in a world car for 2017. And I guess this is another tick in the box. If he can come out on top of this one, then, you know, he's beat all comers.
Yeah, it's a big one in terms of the reputation of the drivers, this one, isn't it? You know, we talked last week about how many Scandinavians are knocking around at the minute, and with Toyota coming in next year, it's more important than ever that young drivers are impressing straight away. And you know, I think outside of the BRC, I think the WRC2 is the best place to battle in an R5 car, and they're definitely going to be going hard this weekend.
Right, you know, there's an argument, I suppose, or it's not really an argument. It adds to the strength that, you know, Elvin is probably the man who's done more clicks this year in an R5 car anyway. So it's set up for him quite nicely, isn't it? If, you know, and that's the thing. Elvin has been mega consistent. It has only been mechanical. So if he gets a clean run, then this surely must finally showcase him as the next. It seems odd calling the next big thing because he's kind of been there and he's had to take this step back. But surely he's got to get snapped up.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'd hope so, wouldn't we? He's, as we've already talked about, he's shown a maturity this year. He's shown speed this year. But I think he'll still be keen to try and wrap the WRC title up, you know, just to underline that, because obviously he had a fantastic start to the year. Some of the opposition have caught him up a little bit. But a win here will do two things, won't it? Firstly, he's beating the best R5 opposition in the world, but secondly, it'll put him well on the way to that title. So it's getting to a key part of the year now where he is going to be negotiating for next year, and you know, this is probably going to be an important rally all round for him.
Now, before we move away too much from Poland, are we prepared to put them on the table and give any predictions on this one? It's all gone quiet over there.
That was that tumbleweed again, wasn't it?
Absolutely, it was the same tumbleweed.
I'm happy to try.
Go on, Jack, you step forward. Go on, my son.
I think it's going to be a VW 1-2-3, and I think it's going to be Ogier, Latvala, Mikkelsen. That's my prediction.
Okay. Brian, have you got anything to add to that?
Well, unfortunately, I wouldn't be surprised to see Ogier fighting back on this one. He's had it tough, hasn't he, in more recent rallies. Road position has been against him. He's still going to have road position against him, but the cleaning probably not as, you know, probably doesn't have such a big impact here. We get very, very big ruts as well on this rally, don't we? So it's one of the events where we see the, you know, some of the corners being incredibly rutted. I've got to say Ogier for the win, I think.
Right. I'm going to put them on the table. I'm going to go Ogier, Mikkelsen, Sordo.
Sordo, that's an interesting one.
I think so. I think that's where it'll be. I'm going with that. That's it. They're on the table now. Done. It's out there in podcast land. I've said it out loud. It's done. There you go. So that's I've done my predictions. You've done your predictions. We'll come back and we'll revisit that on next week's and see how we all get on. If you want to tweet us yours before this beginning of the event, do that. You know, we'll get involved and we'll chat about it and everything else. Anyway, Hyundai Corner. We're going to have another Hyundai Corner this week because we're going to talk about the new i20 R5 Strong on Eeps outing. Jack, talk to us about this one.
Yeah, it's the i20 R5, mate. It's difficult to decide what to call it, isn't it, really? It's not really a competitive debut because it didn't compete in terms of times, but it was the course car on the Ypres rally last weekend, so it got rally mileage, if you like. That's probably the best way to refer to it. As it remains unhomologated, it's not yet allowed to compete on international events, but it went really well. Sources in the event have told us that it was good enough for some quicker stage times, which is really exciting, and it's going to be great to see that car when it comes out, and I think it's going to be very entertaining to watch, especially when Kevin's pedaling as quickly as he was last weekend. Anyway,
this is an interesting one for me, this, because obviously it's to bring in a customer base, but do Hyundai need to sell these cars? You know, it's not quite in the same vein as M Sport, is it? You know, do you understand where I'm coming from?
It's not the main part of their business, but ultimately, I guess it's a chance to make some money out of their motorsport program, and that's really, I guess, where the R5 rules or what the aim of the R5 rules has been is to create a customer class of rallying, if you like. And you know, even the likes of, you could say the same for Citroën over the years or Peugeot Sport, then you know, that's not been there. Obviously, it's been a part of their business, but they've still had a works team as well while they've been selling privateer cars. But I think I think right from the start, when they set up Hyundai Motorsport in Germany, there was always an intention to create a customer business. And it'll be interesting as well. So now they've got a customer business. Will they then sell some WRC cars next year? Because they'll be focusing on 2017 cars. So what happens to the old ones?
Well, I think there's a high-tech team, haven't they? Who've took them over in Italy, who've took the original I-20s. I think they run them in the Italian Championship.
There is some in Italy, yeah.
So I tell you what, right, I'm going to try and do something, because we do record this podcast as live. So what I'm going to try and do, we were going to have Seb a bit later on, but I know Seb sat there now and he's waiting for us. Ryan's been chomping at the bit. He's got plenty he wants to ask him. So first and foremost, Seb, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Ryan. It's good to be back.
Hello.
Thank you.
Seb, I'm going to hand you over to, once again, to our careful and well-groomed driver, Ryan Champion. Ryan, you've got a few things you want to ask Seb about.
Yes, Seb, great to see you out on ePro, one of the highlights of the European Championship in the R5 Hyundai. Tell us a little bit about how the event went for you.
Yeah, so like you say, it was the first time that our new generation i20 R5 was seen in public. We've been sort of developing the car since January, so it's quite a short development period, really, to get a new car together and running. And this weekend on ePro was the first time seeing it out on the public stages, and it was a sort of continuation of our sort of testing program, and also gave us the opportunity to see it against some of our potential rival cars, and for potential customers to see what the package is all about.
Now, you mentioned customers there. This is obviously a customer-based project. So far we've seen the Hyundai World Rally Team just producing WRC cars for the World Championship team, but this is very much about selling a car to customers.
Yes, yeah. So towards the end of last year, the customer racing department was set up, and it's all still based in the same factory in Altenau in Germany as the WRC team. But it's obviously purely focused on providing obviously the initial design development and now production of these cars of the R5 car to be used in sort of regional championships, be it a European Championship, British Championship, or WRC2. The R5 sort of concept seems to have had a real big hit across rallying. So it's great to be there in the market with the car for ourselves.
Now, you talked about doing the ePro Rally because you could compare it to the existing R5 cars that are out there in the market. ePro is one of the strongest of the European rounds. Great European entry, but incredibly strong Belgian entry. You've got Freddy Leukser as the ultimate yardstick in the an R5 Skoda. Firstly, how did you compare against the opposition? And secondly, tell us a little bit about the unique nature of the ePro Rally.
We compared very well, is about all I can say. I've got a bit of I know the times, the team know the times, but I've got a bit of a gagging order on that. But we were really pleased with how the weekend went. Like you say, it gave us the opportunity to sort of see the car in action in comparison. We know from previous years that Kevin and myself drove there a couple of years ago, and he was there last year, so we know that we're sort of on the pace, really, and obviously with the likes of Freddy, Stefan Lefebvre, Brian Bouffier, we know that they're on the pace as well, and in different cars to us. So that was a really interesting yardstick. And throughout the course of the week, with our pre-event test and the rally, we conducted about 400 kilometres with no issues at all, really. So that's a really sort of big positive. And as we move towards the homologation later this summer, that's a very important step. And really sort of a pleasing part for that. In terms of the rally itself, wow, I mean, it's like you say, it's sort of the jewel in the crown, really, one of the hallmark events of the European Championship. It's incredibly difficult rally. I think everyone who has competed there this last weekend or in the past will tell you, you look at it on the face of it and think, it's just, lots of straights and 90 degree junctions. How hard can it be? But that sort of hides the truth, really. It's one of the most demanding tarmac rallies there is, just because the speeds are so high. The surface changes practically every time you turn through one of these junctions. You're either onto concrete or new tarmac or slippy older broken tarmac. There's a real mixture there, and the ultimate sort of key part of the event, I guess, is all the cutting. It's in sort of open farmland fields for the majority of the rally, and that provides an opportunity to hook through and cut a huge amount of the corners. And that's
pretty much you could argue where the rally is won or lost.
Now, you've had a really busy program of testing over over recent weeks, as well as some rallies thrown in also. We've talked about drivers previously. We talked to Craig Green, for example, about jumping from an R5 into a WRC car. From the core driver's point of view, how do the cars compare? What do you feel the differences are?
With the R5 specification car, it is... Obviously, first and foremost, it's not as powerful in terms of the engine. It may have the same size engine and obviously turbocharged 1.6, but it's not been tuned as much. So you can feel that there's perhaps not quite as much of a punch out the corners. Is the main thing in that sense. And on the sort of perhaps rougher gravel events, the suspension, while still very capable, you're perhaps not able to give it quite as much abuse as you are in a WRC car. I think you can see on some stages in the World Championship, the R5 cars are actually incredibly closely matched, within 0.4, 0.5 of a second a kilometre to some of the WRC drivers. And I think that shows how sort of competitive the formula is, and also in certain environments how closely matched they are. Okay, you go to other rallies and there's perhaps a bigger gap, but from my side, it's all about the performance of the engine and just how much abuse a WRC car can take, really.
Now, we've got incredibly exciting rules for 2017 coming with a new generation of World Rally cars. You've also had your first opportunity to sit in the test car for the 2017 regulations. And how did that compare to the current WRC?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, actually. After we'd finished Rally Sardinia, we had a couple of days, and then we were straight into testing the new, like I say, 17 car. And... From my point of view, we did the initial sort of very first run of the day, and it's a testing ground that we know quite well. We've worked there in the past with R5 and with the 16 WRC car. And yeah, for me, I was like, crikey, this thing feels quick. And at the moment, we've only got some of the initial modifications to it. You know, we weren't testing any of the aerodynamics as such, or it was just the engine upgrades and a couple of other bits and pieces here and there, but already it feels like quite a significant step in terms of the power available. And again, like I said, the gap between R5 and WRC, you know, the punch in the engine, this felt like another big step again, really. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes forward. And I think one of the big challenges will be actually being able to extract the most out of it, because whilst there will be a huge amount of extra power on tap for the drivers, with the subtle changes in the aerodynamic, well, not perhaps subtle with the aerodynamics, but aerodynamic changes and subtle differences in terms of the wheelbase and the wheel track of these cars, actually being able to harness all that new power and extra power is perhaps where the secret's going to lie.
I think judging by some of the images of the Toyota testing, you just need an iron board.
Yeah, perhaps.
You get a big iron board and just bolt it on the back. That'll sort the job out. That's your aero pack gun.
But then you get too much downforce at the back, Tony. You see the Citroën in Finland and it's taken off at the front, isn't it? So there's a balance, but that's...
I like the fact you've been looking at photographs of other cars and seeing where perhaps their strengths and weaknesses lie.
I think every driver in the World Championship and every engineer that works for all the teams is watching all these YouTube videos and pictures with a very, very close eye to see, all right, their car's doing this. And it's interesting how, we're almost as excited as the spectators are when a new video comes out, because you can look at it and perhaps learn something from it and obviously try and use that to your advantage for the development of our own car.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle
hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We cut away there. We were in the middle of things. Now, we've just spoke about obviously the car's debut, unofficial debut, untimed debut, but you know sometimes everything else at Ypres. Now, last time we spoke, or certainly a couple of times ago, we had you on, we were talking about the possibilities of perhaps Hyundai bringing that R5 to the British Rally Championship. Now, there's reports this week that the British Rally Championship could indeed be going to Ypres. Now, as a former competitor in the British Rally Championship and as a man who knows ERC, do you see that as a good fit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, initially you might think, oh, okay, well, how can a rally in Belgium count towards the British Championship? But when you look into it in a bit more detail, I think, you know, why not? It's, like I mentioned just before, Ypres is one of the most well-respected and famous events, tarmac events on the calendar. And for a lot of people, it's perhaps even cheaper to go to Ypres than it would be to go to the Irish rallies or the Isle of Man. So from that point of view, I don't see any big issue. And I think, yeah, it would add something totally different. It's a unique rally, the likes of which there's nothing in the UK, really, in terms of the stages. And one thing that really does make the rally stand out is it's got an incredible atmosphere. You cannot escape the fact that the rally is on in town. The whole place is taken over, the service park in the beautiful market square. It's a really brilliant event, and I think it would the BRC could add an interesting sort of angle to it, and I think it could also gain a lot from sort of using, you know, or going to that rally as well.
Fantastic. Now, if I can use you while you're here, because you're a man who knows the event as well. Now, I got lambasted last week. I was prepared to put them on the table and say Freddie Lucas was going to win that event, and sure enough, he did. Now, is it easy for Freddie? Obviously, you were keeping an eye on everybody. You know, I think a couple of drivers were a little bit unlucky towards the end, but Freddie came through in the end. How close was it, and how easy was it for Freddie in Europe? As you were running Car Zero, you were seeing these guys fighting, I guess, behind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's never easy to win any rally, and but obviously Freddie has got, it's 11 victories now on Ypres, and I think the hallmark of his victories in the last few years, certainly, have been just incredible consistency. He knows the rally intimately, where he can cut, where not to, and so he's avoided all the punctures that have afflicted a lot of people. He's I think by his own admission, he's perhaps not always been the fastest. I mean, this weekend he only actually won one stage all weekend, which is quite remarkable, really. But he was always there, top three sort of times, and I think some of the drivers had a bit of mechanical misfortune. Yeah, you know, I've been there in the past and faced it myself. It's one of those that's, you know, it's kind of painful at the time. But I think I wouldn't say Freddie would have seen this one as any easier or than the others. In terms of just the rally as a whole, I mean, like I say, we were running just one car ahead of the zero car. We had VIP on the doors, but essentially we were sort of the first quick car on the stage, and we sort of found it incredibly challenging, the first pass over the stages. It sounds bizarre, but there was actually almost like a cleaning effect, because the rally had experienced a huge amount of rain in the build-up to the event. It's like all the roads have been washed, but also there's like a fine layer of dust on the surface, and every driver on Friday on the first loop was saying, even though the road is dry, there's just no grip whatsoever. So We were commenting, talking to the other guy, the other competitors, that, you know, 2 years ago when it was bone dry, it was a completely different event because you could attack every corner so much, whereas this year it was far from it. And I think you could tell that when on the second pass through the stage, we found it a lot more grip. And then on the Saturday, you could see when they'd reversed the drivers as well. So the top 10 were in classification were flipped around. You know, the times were kind of improving as you went further down the order. So it sounds ironic, really, doesn't it, that it was cleaning on a tarmac rally, but it certainly seemed to be the case this week.
No, I can see that. I can see that most definitely. So, Seb Marshall, man of mystery and man of travel. Where did you're home now at the moment, which is quite new territory for you, I guess, at the moment. What's next? Where are you
it is,
next?
Yeah, for the first time in four weeks, I put the key in the front door and stepped into my house. And next up, there's a short break now. Then we've got some more testing of the 2017 test car, and then we'll be. Moving on with that, a couple more tests with the R5 before the homologation is planned for later in the summer as well. So, yeah, it's a short break, but back onto it soon. And, hopefully competing on a few more rallies later in the year as well.
Fantastic. Listen, mate, I really do appreciate your time again and again. for the second time this week, it's great to have you part of the show, and you know the door's always open to you, and we appreciate you coming on and telling us all about what's going on, because we do have a little bit of a special place in our hearts at Absolute Rally for High and Dye, as you know. We always have High and Dye Corner, so to have a man from High and Dye joining us is always a little bit of an honour, so I thank you so much, Seb, as ever, mate, for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, and speak to you soon, guys.
Cheers, Seb.
Yeah, take care. All the best.
Cheers.
Thanks, Seb. All the best. And that was Seb Marshall. It was good to have Seb on. Unfortunately, we did have him on earlier, but it didn't quite work. So I might as well give that away now before Jack Bengian gets on Twitter and gives us a hard time, right?
Well, he will do. He won't let it lie, will he?
He gave me pelters. Even his dad gave me pelters last time. Can you believe it? He got his dad involved. His dad gave me a hard time about it. So fair play. So we've just had to do something with Seb again there, but still there you go. So at this point in the program, and we're going to cross over, and we're going to have a little bit of a chat with Mark Higgins, who I know, right, you spoke to at Goodwood.
Yeah, just had a brief catch up with Mark at the top of the hill. Good to chat to him about his exploits on the Isle of Man. It sounds like an incredible few days, and great to get his thoughts on it.
Honestly, it was probably one of the best chats I've had with Mark for a long time, and very open as ever, very honest. And it was I just watched. I don't know if you've seen the video yet, and I've tweeted it out, folks. If you are listening to this and you get on our Twitter page, you'll find that I tweeted out the in-car video with Mark actually talking us through. Which he does like to do, of course. He's done that before now on rallies as well, but on this one he's done it retrospectively to be safe, and he's talking you through, and it's got his heart monitor over in the corner, and it's got where the DRS system comes in. I didn't even realise the car had a DRS system, same as a Formula 1 car, and he explains why that was brought in and everything else. And very, very, very interesting chat that I had with Mark, and very interesting to see what's going to happen next with that one anyway. So we're going to disappear, and we're going to talk to Mark Higgins, and then we're going to come back with a few more headlines, and we're also going to then do our any other business as well. So sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast with Mark Higgins, and we'll be back at the end of the program.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter @absolute_rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a little bit of a growing legend, it's fair to say. Mark Higgins, welcome back, mate.
Yeah, thanks. Cheers. Good to be back on.
It's great. I'll be honest with you. I was hoping to catch you. I went over to the Isle of Man. It's third time I've been over. Went over to watch the TT. I missed your flying laps, but all my mates seen them. So I've only seen the videos of them, and I was devastated. And I've got to ask you first of all, what happened on senior day? How come it didn't run?
Yeah, I mean, it was a big shame, really. We were trying to get a run on the Wednesday, because we actually set the time on the Monday. We weren't able to run on the Wednesday, and then we were scheduled to run before the senior race, but unfortunately, because of the weather changes, they sort of bumped us to the back of the schedule, and then when there was a bad accident, we lost the run, which was, we were gutted, really, because we only got two runs around there. And the third, we were building up to try and go for the 1:30, but you know, there was unforeseen circumstances, and you know, we know it's a bike event, and we fit around the bikes the best we can, and we don't want to disrupt anything, so we do what we're told.
Absolutely. But do you know what? And I was sort of, obviously, you know what it's like. When you plonk yourself somewhere on the TT circuit, you end up talking to everybody around you and stuff like that. And I was chatting to a few people. And one thing I was trying to get my head around desperately, you know, obviously we've all done a bit of rallying and stuff like that. But how do you get yourself ready for something like that when it keeps on moving? If you know what I mean? The time, obviously, you must be getting yourself psyched up, and then know it's being moved. And then it's being psyched up again. Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever done in that respect, because it's very hard to get somewhere even quiet to get yourself psyched up, because you're with everyone, which is great. And then we went up to the Cregna Bar to get ready on the Wednesday. Then we were told, sorry that this is now on the Friday, early in the morning. Then we came back down to the grandstand. Then we went back up again. So it was massive sort of highs and lows, really, and adrenaline highs getting ready and then sort of switching off. But it was just such an anticlimax, really, to not get the last run, because that's what we built ourselves up to. And, you know, in the 6 years I've been driving around there, I've only actually done eight laps in total. So every time you go out, you learn, because nothing can prepare you for driving around at those sort of speeds. It's all very well driving around and memorizing the corners, but it's a bit different when you're doing 175 miles an hour.
It's quite funny, because I was with some guys that are friends of mine that have actually raced it, and now they just go over and they spectate and stuff like that. And I spent most of the week with those guys watching, and yeah. They've been over early, seeing the early laps. Obviously, unfortunately, I've missed those, but they were blown away. Now these are guys that have raced it. And what kind of response did you get from, like, the McGuinnesses and you know, all these guys that race it on bikes? What kind of response did you get from those guys in the paddock?
Yeah, well, it was really nice, because, you know, when they heard the actual speed, they thought it was wrong, you know, because it was just very different, knowing what they do about the bikes. I mean, I've got the utmost respect for them guys. I think they're absolute heroes, and how they ride those bikes around there is unbelievable. But it was just nice to get a bit of credit from them, and they were, you know, wow, that was that was a good time. So and I think what's best from my point of view is that we actually did the time with just two laps, so, you know, obviously we had a bit more practice, I'm sure we could have got a bit more out of it. But an amazing place, and very, very lucky boy to drive such a car around there.
Now, you've done tons of stuff. Obviously, you're doing the stunt work now, you're a former British Rally Champion, you've competed in the World Rally Championship. Do you still get nervous in your day-to-day work? What, you know, in the stuff you do, aside from what you've just done there, do you still get nervous in the other stuff?
I think adrenalise is the word, not nervous.
Nice word, I like that.
Yeah, but TT's is definitely nervous. But you've got to get yourself wound up, otherwise you don't perform at your best. I mean, I'm back out in China again in a few weeks, and I haven't actually done a competition for a little bit. So the first one, again, getting yourself back into it is always, you know, when you're on the start line, you've got to have that adrenaline going to get yourself fired up. But I still absolutely love of everything I do, the competing side of it. And the way the BRC is looking at the moment, even, you know, it'd be great to come back and do a couple of those events at some point. So, it's been a good year. And it's funny how doing or reinventing myself with different things has really helped us and probably given us more media coverage than I've ever had before.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? That's, again, as I say, because I was talking to the guys out there, you know, these are pure hardened race guys, that's all, you know, short circuit, road racing and stuff like that. But yeah, Instantly they were telling me all about you, and I kind of had a right smile, because I'm thinking, oh, I've kind of grown up watching Mark, but I'm going to let these guys have the moment, because they were telling me about what you were doing and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, yeah, good stuff, oh, yeah. I'm a little bit familiar with Mark, but...
I mean, what was really nice is the bike guys, the amount of people that did come up and really enjoyed the car, because it's just something a bit different. And I think you know, the actual air, it moves at 170 miles an hour, and you stood 2 feet away from the wheel. It was quite impressive by all accounts, so I was happy enough being inside it rather than watching it.
Now, it was a stunning piece of kit. I was lucky enough to see the car probably about 3 months ago. I was a road driver for something, and I was very luckily enough kind of just briefly taken round it, and it was breathtaking to look at. And it, what's the best way of putting it? It took me back, and I know obviously the Subaru Pro Drive thing, the history and everything, but it did take me back to that. I looked at it and thought, God, this is proper.
The whole project for me has been amazing. To work with Pro Drive from the start of it, to turn that car around in such a short time, it's basically a world rally car, but the little aero package on it. You know, we've got 550 horsepower, so it just feels fantastic. And we never got a test before the TT in proper weather. It was always either raining or very cold. But the first time I drove it and got to the bottom of Bray Hill, I knew this thing was special. And I came back in with a massive smile on my face and just was gutted I never got to drive around there a few more times. But yeah, I'd have to say it's probably one of the best cars I've ever driven, and one of the most enjoyable things I've drove. And it does give you a real big buzz when you come back in and you're hurtling around stuff quite quickly.
So what's next for the car now? Does the car, is it going to stick around? Is it going to get wheeled back out next year? Will they do another evolution of it? What happens with that car now?
We really don't know. I mean, I've just come back from Goodwood. We had the car doing a few demo runs up there, and a couple of journalists drove the car up there as well to do some reports on it. So I think if we can find something really, I mean, this could be a great one. Anybody comes up with some really good ideas to do something totally different with it, we could definitely put it to Subaru, and that's why the TT appealed to them, because it is very different and it got a lot of coverage. So I'd love to do something else with it. We're not sure what's happening with the TT next year. There's almost unfinished business going there with not getting that third lap, but on the other hand, you know, do you sort of quit when you're ahead? So let's see what happens.
One thing that did pop into my head is as I looked at it in regionally, and then I thought Pikes Peak.
Yeah, but the only problem with Pikes Peak is you're up against the Peugeot if you're going for the ultimate record, and that was a £10 million project, so it's, and probably over 1,000 horsepower. I don't think you could ever get anywhere near that sort of car. But it'd be great, you know, great to still do Pikes Peak. I did it myself in 2001, and we never actually finished it. It was half gravel and half tarmac then, but it's all tarmac now, so I think it's lost its appeal a little bit to what it used to be. And the Nürburgring has been mentioned as well, you know, to do like a sub-7 minute would be really, really cool. But I'll have to do a bit of revising for that one, because I've only driven around it in a hire car once, so that could be interesting.
Obviously, we know you from the island. You obviously know it very, very well, but you don't live over there now. But leading up to this, did you kind of fly in maybe a few weeks before and just have a few drives round and just reacquaint yourself, or do you not need to do that? How does it work kind of getting your mindset on going round that island?
The thing of driving round on the normal open roads doesn't really help. It gives you a little bit of a jot, you know, a memory jot, but I've been watching the videos really. I mean, I used to, before I did my first one in 2011, I think every time I went in the gym, for example, I just put Tony Pond's video on and watched that. And then when I did my own the next year, I'd watch that video. So prior to going over, I just studied the videos. And we're lucky enough that I drive the VIP cars a couple of times around, which is a fairly decent speed, at least on closed roads. And that gives you a bit of a feel for where you're going. But as I said, there's nothing like going around there at double the speed of what you would be in a car. And everything looks very, very different at that point. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
I can imagine it looks somewhat blurry.
It's getting your eyes. It's getting your eyes, and I think the bikes say the same thing. You know, when you first head off down there, you're doing 170 miles an hour by the bottom of Bray Hill, and you're so close to everything. So it's getting your brain adjusted to what's going on with the speed. And the bikes, you know, the big bikes, we're doing the same time, just a bit quicker than the 600s. But the 1,000cc, they're doing another 30 miles per hour, top speed than us. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing, and bouncing around all over the place.
I know, it's phenomenal. Now, one thing I wasn't surprised to see, that there wasn't a passenger seat in this car this year.
I definitely made sure that's got out, yeah. After, I mean, the 2011 thing, that was only meant to be the one run, and obviously the extra 100 kilos probably made me very famous. Didn't do a lot for my grey hairs. And, yeah, it's a power-to-weight ratio. That's the one thing we do suffer. We're running about 1,200 kilos and 550 horsepower, while a bike is 200 kilos and 230 horsepower. So any weight we can save, we just chuck it out.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm guessing that journalist didn't turn up again this year, just in case.
No, he did. I think he'd be watching rally and thought this is going to happen in every corner. I've seen these boys go sideways. We didn't really even react till we got back in the paddock later on.
Now, the average reached 128. You're quite confident you would have got that 130 mark?
I think it was on, yeah. We'd had a little sensor go down on the engine, which actually retarded the ignition, so it was showing the engine to be hotter than it was. So there was a bit more engine power. There's always going to be time to come out for myself. So, yeah, I think there was a bit more. I mean, what was great, some of the sectors were really good. We had the sector from Balafbridge to Ramsey, and we'd actually averaged 151 miles per hour average, which is quite a long stretch. So
is that the fastest bit of the circuit, would you say?
I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have said so at all. It's just that, obviously, the stretch they use, it's the bumpiest section as well. So we were closest to the bikes on that section. I think Dunlop took 4 seconds off me in that split. So it's a real good bit for the car. But, you know, definitely not the quickest, but there's not so many tight corners in there to bring the average down.
Solby straight, that must be wound up around there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing this year. We only got a top speed of 169 down there. So we were hoping for a bit more to get us up to nearer 200 where the bikes were. And in fact, when we went there in 2014, we had 164 miles an hour, I think. So we're only actually 5 miles an hour faster, but we're just gaining it all on the corners and accelerating up to that point.
Fantastic. Now, a couple of things. What bit of the entire circuit do you dread?
Bray Hill.
Bray, yeah, I can understand that. That's even before
what happened in 2011, because there's a bump at the bottom which the bikes sort of miss. So I did a bit with Steve Plater, we did a lap around together, and he said the bikes go through that really, really well, but the car, the left wheel's on a bump on the outside. Also, bottom of a garrow. There's probably, I think, 5 or 6 key corners around the course where you can make time or, you know, have a little error. You don't have a little error on the LMA, it'll be a big one. But they're what I call the ballsy corners, and that's you can sort of gain 5 or 10 miles an hour if you know, stick your neck out a bit, but you've got to be so careful over there.
Absolutely. Well, that brings me quite nicely. I've been watching the in-car back, and of course, you're wired up as well, so the heart rate monitor,
yeah,
I thought was fascinating. And because it started off, and you were averaging probably about 130, 130 beats, and I think, oh, Mark's quite relaxed, fair play. And then, all of a sudden, right towards the end, you start peaking at about 150. Now,
yeah. I think a lot of that is to do with the heat as well.
Yeah.
Because it gets really, really hot in the car. And you don't, you know, my resting heart rate is about 50 beats per minute. So I was shocked when I saw it actually up at 130 when you're starting. But you don't think you are, but it must be coming from, you know, obviously using your brain and trying to calculate what's going on with the speeds and things around you. But it was a big shock to me to see how high the rate was. Because you'd swear you were at a, you know, I'd swear I was under 100 beats per minute on how I actually feel when I'm in the car.
Again, it was with all the dials and stuff on the in-car, and we're going to tweet this out anyway, the in-car and stuff like that. But one thing I did, what was with the 170 where the speedo goes red? Was that purposely done like that? Did you have something in the car, so, you know, that, did the speedo go red or something when you hit 170?
Yeah. Well, we have, obviously, the one thing is the DRS. So there's a red button that comes on when I press the DRS to activate the rear spoiler. And that was probably nearly 40% of the lap. But the reason we put that on the speedo was there's a couple of jumps on there. And effectively, the car could potentially fly at anything sort of over that speed. So I just needed to know when I was up near that so I could back off accordingly. So we didn't have an aeroplane going over a jump. So it was there just to give us a warning and just to, you know, having all that data is amazing. It just makes so much difference. So you can be very calculated and be safe. So, you know, you're not going to get into those issues.
Fantastic. So again, I texted a couple of the boys who say racers who go over there and stuff like that. And they came back with lots of things that we've kind of covered. But, and I think you've kind of answered the question, but you do want to go back, don't you?
I do love it. And if people want us to be there, I'd love to be there. There's unfortunately been a couple that, you know, love the bikes and don't like the car, but I think we've turned or changed a few people's opinion this year with this proper car. And yeah, if they want us back, I'd love to go back, yeah.
Do you think, and again, it's a bit left field, this one, but do you think you might see other car manufacturers wanting to do this? And almost, you know, you could almost have Subaru versus trying to get around the TT course.
Yeah, you could, definitely. I mean, I don't think people realise the work that Subaru put in to make it all happen. I mean, it's not just been a case of us turning up or just paying money for it. They've done risk assessments. We have our own clock of the course that runs our part of it. Because the TT originally was a car event. That's how it all started. But it's almost handed over as a car event for that run we do.
Yeah.
And the work that's gone into it over the, as I say, it's been a 6-year sort of project, really, to get to this stage. It has been massive, so Yeah, no, it'd be great for other people to take it on. That, you know, it depends how they feel about having too many cars going around, and if it does detract from the bikes, which is what the TT is all about.
And I think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you, I think there's very few people that can do it. They can physically drive the car around the way you can.
Well, that's very kind of you. I've put a lot of work and effort into it. I love the Isle of Man. I love the tarmac driving over there. And it's I've been a lucky boy, so I'm very happy to have had the chance to do it.
And speaking of tarmac, and speaking of the Isle of Man, final round of the British Rally Championship, you kind of hinted towards it before. Mark, are you coming back?
I would love to. There's been a couple of little conversations going on. If there's any big sponsors out there, we'll definitely do it. But they don't seem to turn up like they used to in the old days.
No.
But I would. And the Manx would be a great one to have a crack on. But it's not dead. And there's a few small conversations, but there's a lot of work to go to make it happen yet.
Are you keen to do it?
Oh, I'd love to. Oh, I'd absolutely love to do it. Yeah.
Now, what can you make of the we keep calling it the new BRC, I suppose it is, but a lot of the events are not new. We know the events, but the new regime, the new categories, the new drivers in some instances, what can you make of it all?
I think it's great. It needed a refresh. I think having a year off was a really good idea because people came back with a bit more hunger and a bit more enthusiasm for it. I think the only negative is how short some of the events are. I mean, the Scottish was, 65 miles at the weekend?
We ended up losing. I did it, and we lost the stage as well. So
really,
that's
for an international. I know it's not international, but it is effectively it's our British Rally Championship. It'd just be nice to have a few more miles and make it a little bit more challenging in that sense. But I think to have the amount of cars that are out there at the moment, our five cars, and all the juniors coming through, and DMAC doing what they're doing for the youngsters, is great. And you know, rallying's not in a great place at the moment. It's quite difficult. And even you look at the World Championship and everything around. So if this can start getting back up there and people want to be out there doing it, fantastic. And it's all about getting good entries, and they seem to be doing that at the moment.
If the quality there, you know, obviously we know we've got Elvin there, and we've got Frederick Arlen, who unfortunately didn't have a great weekend, but he's got pedigree in WRC too.
Yeah.
Is the quality there? You know, are those guys good enough?
I think Elvin's pace, he's top of his game. I think what people underestimate the pace of the WRC and the speed those guys are actually going. And then when you see Elvin come back in the BRC and do what he's doing, you know, I think that's a good competition. It's great to have Elvin there, who's a great gauge for the other guys. But, you know, they've got to beat Elvin if they want to go to the next level. So, you know, use the British Championship to do that. And if you can beat Elvin, then you know you're worthy of going up and to doing stuff in the WRC again.
What's quite frightening is that I can remember when you were that benchmark.
That's a lot of years ago now, isn't it? The scary thing is, if I came back and did the British Championship, it would be 20 years next year since I actually won my first one. It would be quite cool if I could win that again.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. But no, it would be great to see you in something. It would be great because we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, and we just think it would be quite nice just for a benchmark, really, as well. I think it's obviously Elvin's there and Frederick's there as well, but there's a lot of also runs behind them, and it would be good to give those guys a benchmark as well. But we'll keep Everton Cross. Unfortunately, we did try and get Ryan out on the Pirelli, and we fell foul at the last hurdle.
Really? Yeah.
Because it was going to be 10 years since he'd won the Pirelli, when it was against Alexi yourself and David. And
Yeah, that's right. I remember that year.
It was a mega year. And we lobbied everybody to try and get him out. And a deal very nearly came together last minute. But unfortunately, it didn't quite happen. So we'll keep the support for you to get out on the Manx anyway. I think it'd be great to see you out there.
Fantastic. I'd love to do it. And I just love, you know, the BRC has always been very good to me. It's helped me a lot. And it will be nice, and especially with rallying in China, it keeps you match fit under the radar. So it'd be interesting to see how we got on.
Fantastic. But listen, Mark, I do really, really appreciate your time and grabbing you. I'll let you crack on now, and I thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally. And again, it was a pleasure to watch the onboard, and I was gutted I missed it live.
Cheers, and thanks for all your support.
Take care. All the best. Thanks, Mark.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. I hope you enjoyed that little feature with Mark. I thought Mark was on really, really good form there. And I thought we'd come back and we're going to talk to the boys now. Unfortunately, the way we've recorded this, the boys have no idea what Mark was saying. But he didn't call them any names, so you're all right, boys. Don't worry. Now, I wanted to come back to this Ypres story with regards to being a round of the BRC. Jack, you're quite keen for this to happen, whereas your colleague David Evans isn't. So perhaps we could go through both versions and then get Ryan's take on this. You're quite keen for this to happen.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think the main thing behind it is that it shows the BRC is serious. It's serious about being a major championship and potentially having a round away from the ERC is a major coup, I think, for the championship. You know, Ypres is one of the most prestigious tarmac rallies in the world. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And you look at the entries that are already there every year, because, I mean, the big thing this year was that the highest ERC finisher was seventh in the order. So the top six cars weren't regular ERC runners. So if you combine the BRC with those guys, I think it'd be a cracking battle. And I think the other main thing to say is that the BRC are well aware of the sort of the so-called smaller entries to the rally, and they're looking at ways to sort of incorporate them and make things easier. So it's been bandied around that the championship would expand to an 8-round calendar rather than a 7-round calendar as it is now, and they'd have two drop scores rather than one. So that'd give smaller sort of competitors the chance to drop around and not go if they thought it was too expensive. So I think it's a win-win all round.
Is that small competitors as in someone like me or somebody that's vertically challenged?
Someone like you, Tony.
Thanks. Just to get clarification on that.
Now,
right. David Evans, and I'm going to quote pretty much what David wrote, and again, massive respect for what David says and does anyway, but Ypres is a great, great rally and is genuinely Europeans' best, but I don't understand the need to ship our boys over there when we have equally brilliant rallies on equally epic roads within the four corners of our green and pleasant land.
Okay. Well, I can sort of sit from both sides. I actually did it. I did Ypres as a round of the British Championship. It was at one point part of the British Junior Championship, and I actually went over to do Ypres when it was a Peugeot-supported championship. And I mean, as far as competing on that rally goes, it is just an incredible rally. As Seb just talked about earlier on, with the service area in the centre of the city, the whole city gets involved, the whole surrounding area. You know, it's an amazing event, and it's certainly one I would want to go back to. When I you know, it's an event I really will make an effort to go back to at some point. So an incredible experience. So, you know, I think people would love doing the event. The only thing that worries me a little bit is the cost of going there. You know, Belgium is in the fortunate position where rallying is really a bigger sport than it is here. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some incentives for British crews to go over, you know, help with entry and ferries and that kind of thing, because they've often done that in the past. So if they can do something like that, that would be great. Having two drop scores, does that help? I mean, my worry is there that if somebody does have an issue with budget, then, you know, then they don't go to that event. And then if you only get two or three British entries, is it worth having it as a round of the championship? So I can kind of see it from both sides. If they can put some let's say funding in place to make it easy to contest the rally, brilliant, because it is just an amazing event.
Do you know what, it's an event that I've always wanted to do. Now, again, would I feel the need to have to go and do the BRC as to do it? No, I'd probably do it as a standalone. But I can understand why BRC want to do it, because they want to perhaps entice people, maybe some Belgian competitors who think, okay, well, that's a round of our, you know, we can do a round of the BRC and maybe look at doing some of the Irish tarmac rounds or something like that. Maybe. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I am massively undecided. For me, And again, right, you remember these days. I remember having a very short and sweet BRC. The British Rally Championship, 5-6 really good events, you know, proper events, proper mileage. Go and do it, boys.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. You know, I think I'd like to see it where, you know, where you have a set number of events and you get on and contest them and the winners decided at the end of those events. And to be honest, I feel a little bit the same with the Joker situation. Yes, it can spice things up a bit, but it can also confuse the situation. And I'm all for making rallying very simple. It's a complicated enough sport. So I think once you get into two drop scores and more rounds, it does, for me, muddy the water a little bit.
For the record, I'm glad about the Joker situation because I played mine on the Scottish, but hey, we'll talk about that in a minute in any other business anyway, but there you go. So Jack, you're still pro this idea. I feel like we're doing a referendum here. You're pro this idea of being in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the same reasons that I said before, you know, I can appreciate the points on both sides. But at the minute, you know, I think we've got seven brilliant events anyway. So adding Ypres as an eighth is, you know, it's an absolutely excellent calendar. And I think that having another thing to mention about Ypres is something Ryan touched on briefly there, is that, you know, it's maybe going to attract some of the European guys that we need next year. Because one of the problems that I've referred to in MN this week is we've had so many entries this year for the BRC, especially for the front running guys, there's not many people left with R5s to come and do it next year. So if guys do move on to other things, WRC, ERC maybe, then where are the other R5 entries going to come from? So I think having a round in mainland Europe makes that easier for European competitors to maybe consider the championship and move through that way.
Okay, fair dues. Now it brings us quite nicely, really. I'm not going to be smug, but Freddie Loic's won. Just saying.
I don't think you were the only one who backed Freddie Loic, so don't be too smart.
I think you were talking about all kinds of people, Ryan Champion.
No, I said there's other people in the mix,
yeah, but
I still favoured Freddie Loic.
I was prepared to put them on the table and go, look, it's going to be Freddie. Done. There you go. It's out there. That's. I was prepared to do that, whereas you were... To say you had splinters in your backside was an understatement.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But regardless, to win one rally 11 times is an incredible feat, isn't it? Especially a long, tough rally like Ypres. You know, when you think of all the things that can go wrong on a rally, and to win it that many times is very, very impressive.
Yeah, it is. Go on, Jack. Sorry, mate.
But I was just saying, it's difficult to be smug about Loic's when you look at what happened in the actual rally with Bouffier and Lefebvre both going out. I think one of those two probably would have beaten Loic's if they'd have stayed in the rally, to be honest. But that's just my two pence.
Oh, you bitch.
Not the first time I've been called that, Tony. I'm sure I remember the last.
No, I'm still... again, no matter how you win, he's won anyway. But there you go. Now, a friend of the show, Chris Ingram, managed to secure second in the ERC Juniors and keeps his lead in the juniors. He was beaten only by his Opel teammate, which is a Grubel. Am I pronouncing that right? Because the people love it when I pronounce names, don't they?
I've heard that both ways. I thought it was Grubel, but I've heard both ways, to be honest. So maybe Ryan knows.
No, I'm leaving that one to you.
You know what? Yeah, I love the way you back me up so much. I do love it, but it wasn't too much between them. Something like 25 seconds after an epic rally, and to be fair to Chris, he did kind of think that Grebel was going to be the man to beat there. So he's going to be ecstatic with that anyway. So, but more to come for Chris. We're going to be catching up with Chris again probably in a couple of weeks' time before I think it's Estonia the next round for the juniors. So we'll catch up with Chris there. But as I say, it was. I think one of the ones that you predicted, Rye, was Kevin Princeton, who's done quite well in the 208, who again, runner-up. And, I'll tell you one thing I was shocked about, and maybe it's just I haven't paid that much attention. No, it's all right, I'm talking nonsense. It's all right. I was going to say something. There was a lot of penalties handed out, but I've just looked through, and it was just the way my page was. But there was seven or eight drivers that picked up time penalties, which it's not very often you see these days, is it, at the end of the day?
I was looking forward to that. I thought you were going to get on your high horse for a minute there. It sounded like you were gathering pace for a right rant there.
No. Wait till I get to any other business, my friend.
No.
Wait till I get to any... I'm just winding the job up now. I'm just getting there now. So before we do get to any other business, by the way, I just wanted to mention a couple of other things. Obviously, it was the Scottish, and we mentioned it earlier in the podcast, Elvin Evans securing that win. Where does that leave us now, Jack, championship-wise? Obviously, this is your baby as well. You did the coverage for it. Is it game over now?
I've written a column this week to say that it's not game over. So if you pick up Aaron this week and you want to know about the title battle, then you can read my column and learn all about it. But for you privileged Absolute Rally listeners, I will give you a short spiel. So the gap's 20 points at the minute between Elvin Evans and Frederick Olin. Olin, not a guy who's done a lot of tarmac before, and we've got 2.5 tarmac rounds coming up, haven't we? So it's going to be interesting to see how far Frederick can push. But the main reason why it's not over is because we've got that double points finale in the Manx. So potentially anyone who's 49 points behind Elvin, and if Elvin retires, they can overturn his lead. So it's not over until the last round, whatever happens. So it'll be interesting to see.
So a solid top three, and I'll be honest with you, the guys who finished there now, I know David Bogie was going very well, and they were thought he was going to snatch that third, and we were held in a holding control outside service, and I think we waited there and waited, and unfortunately David didn't come through. But Desi Henry, who's in that R5 Skoda, Desi's been around for a fair few years and doing some of the one makes and stuff like that back in the day. But he's been doing a lot of gravel rallies recently. I know he did some BTRDA rounds, and I think he's been doing some of the forestry over in Ireland as well. One that perhaps wouldn't have been predicted to end up on the podium of a BRC round, but he's been putting in the clicks in that Skoda R5, Jack.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of work. If you look at that top three, Bogie would have been second, but he retired with a busted radiator at the end of the rally. So Tom Cave took second on the last stage, and Desi was promoted to third. And Desi won the DMAC Carlisle stages in the BTRDA a few weeks ago. So going well on gravel. But if you speak to Desi, he would regard himself as a gravel driver. He wouldn't regard himself as a tarmac driver, even though he does a lot of Irish tarmac championship rounds as well. So not a surprise to see him going well on gravel. But he seems to have taken a step up a gear since he's had this R5. He's used to it now, and he's really pushing on.
I think you've got a plane going over there, Jack.
No, that's over me. That sounds like the RAF have come to visit North Yorkshire.
Is that your car come to pick you up? Right. Have you got the suit on now? You got the black dickie bow on, because you know, obviously dinner suit and everything else, wouldn't put it past you. In fact, I want to talk to you about dinner suits and stuff, because we still haven't done anything about what you were up to last weekend. But I just want to go to the juniors, Jack, before we move on. I had a brief chat with our winner, who's
Sindra Furustreth.
Yes, I had a chat with him. He was in very, very good form, and I asked that question because I told him that Ryan had pointed out a few things, and I told him he'd been part of any other business, and he was fascinated that somebody had been talking about him, to be perfectly honest with you. I'll probably put this to Ryan, to be honest with you, first and foremost. Right, I did genuinely have a conversation with him, and I said, look, we spoke about you on our show, and I said, we've spoke about the car as well, and we can't understand how you can make that car go. And he couldn't understand why we thought he couldn't make that car go.
And I think I said earlier in the year, you know, certainly on gravel, I think the car's probably still competitive. Maybe on the tarmac now, it maybe doesn't quite have the power of some of the other cars. But then the Evo 2 package that they did for that, or the Evo package, really was quite a strong upgrade. I think it's just we haven't seen them run regularly, have we, in recent years in this country? So it's difficult to see what level they're at.
He was mega confident. I was talking to Matt Beebe, who runs the car for maybe Motorsport, and before the rally, more than happy, very confident that they were going to go there and get a result, and sure enough they did. But in the junior section, Jack, where are we at now? Who would you say is basically going to be cast aside now, and who are the runners and riders now?
It's very tough to look past Rob Duggan now. He finished second on the Scottish last weekend, and he won the previous two rounds, one on tarmac, one on gravel. So he's demonstrated himself to be very good on both surfaces. I think a lot of people have known about Rob for the last couple of years. He's come out of nowhere a little bit, but if you've been watching his progress, his rise has been quite meteoric. So he's definitely the one to look at, and he's not yet played his joker, which is the incredible part. He's currently leading the championship and not yet played his joker. He's just ahead of Gus Greensmith, who we know is doing the Manx, but not any of the other rounds. rounds. So I think it's very, the gap to Sindra's fairly substantial now, and he's going to take a lot of catching, Rob. He's going to have a lot of problems over the next few rounds with Ulster, he's Irish, Rob, so it's being held in Northern Ireland, the Ulster as usual, so it's not quite a home round, but one that he's done before, so be interesting to see how he gets on
so
there.
So we'll just go through the other finishes as well. Another massive result for Matt Edwards. Sadly for him, the only group anchor registered for BRC, which is, I think, is a great shame. I think Matt would want a battle, but he likes mixing it in with the R5s anyway. Just finishing outside the top 10, Matt was 11th, went very, very well, and as I say, I think that championship's more or less tied up for him now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Matt's a very strong guy. We spoke about, I did many other business on him the other week when he debuted that Fiesta R5. So we've talked about him quite a bit. He's going very well. He finished 7th of the BRC runners on the event. So another very, very strong finish from him. And yeah, shame not to see anyone in that BRC 2 class, but there's quite a few in the National Rally Cup. So maybe for next year, they just need to be encouraged a little bit to make that step up and challenge BRC 2. Maybe Edwards' pace has just scared them off a little bit.
Yeah, I think it probably has. I think there was such a strong contingent in BTRDA of M4 runners. I think they thought there was naturally that contingent was all going to move as well. And it hasn't quite happened. It's almost been broken up, that little gang. And I think it's a great shame. I think obviously Chris Wheeler was the only finisher in BRC 3, and I was the only finisher in BRC 4. So there you go. So I'm going to talk about my thoughts on the Scottish Rally in any other business. Have we got anything else, boys? We need to talk about before we get there.
I was just going to come in there with the Scottish Championship runners, really. You know, if you look at Gary Pearson, he finished 8th overall on the rally, and bearing in mind the Scottish runners didn't have a recce, and he was pretty close behind the BRC runners that did have a recce, and that's that's certainly a huge advantage to them. So fair play to him for finishing 8th, and then hot on his heels, only 10 seconds behind him was the evergreen Jock Armstrong in his Subaru. So Jock been going well in the Scottish Championship for years now, because Jock, I first met Jock rallying just over 20 years ago, so Jock knows that part of the world pretty well.
I can jump in there as well and just say that Gary Pearson had a spin on the first stage, so he was about 20 odd seconds of the first stage, so to come back and win from that was incredible. And also Jock Armstrong, someone we didn't talk about the other week when I was completely forgot to raise it, but he had a cycling accident where he'd really damaged his shoulder, and he was really struggling, and he did tell me over the weekend if they'd have had a puncture he wouldn't have had the strength to lift the wheel off the car. So for him to finish second, real adversity for the top two, and they both put in a brilliant stint to beat Mike.
I'll tell you what, it must have been one of the few that didn't have punctures, because there were so many people who did have punctures. There's somebody else, and Ryan, you remember Mike Faulkner, there's a guy who's been around forever and a day doing I remember him doing the 106s. I think he went to 206s, and then he ended up just back doing the Scottish Championship and various Evos, and small operation, small team, and everything else. And another guy I want to tip my hat to again, another lad who I competed with in the Fiestas way back when, Mark McCulloch, who also jumps in the co-driver's seat in BTRDA from time to time as well, sat with Westing Junior in that Satria 1400 Screamer thing last year, and Mark's a fair old peddler, and he was 4th overall. So tip our hat there to the to our Scottish compatriots. I did try and claim asylum and stay up there, but it wasn't an option apparently, but so there you go. Right, boys, we're getting towards that point where we're it's the end of the program, and I just wanted to Jack, I'm going to go to your any other business first.
Okay, mine's quite UK-centric this week, I'm afraid, but it's the ALMC stages this weekend.
Tarmac, and, National Tarmac Championship.
Exactly, yeah, it's the Irish National Championship, but it's also a round of the MSA Asphalt Championship, the sort of usually English-based championship, but they've got 15 WRC cars in their top 20 entries, which I just wanted to point out as a phenomenal entry, really. We really don't see 15 WRC cars in an entry list these days. Even I think Donegal would be quite close with that, so I wanted to point that out. And there's some really good guys going over, like Hugh Hunter's in a Melvin Evans Evans prepared S12B, and Melvin Evans himself is driving Manus Kelly's Donegal winning car. So there's some really proper machinery going out there. So I just wanted to point everyone to that and definitely keep an eye on that event, because it will be a really close run thing. And the other thing I wanted to point to was that it's road rally in my other thing.
Go on.
Can you believe this, guys? I'm going to bring up road rally and an absolute rally.
It's absolute rally. You're allowed. Go on.
This is fantastic. So John Millington, the former coordinator of M Sport.
Let me put you straight there, my friend. He still is.
Go on.
Millie's still there pulling the strings, but he's just not going on the events now.
There you go. So John Millington was back road rallying for the first time since 1985 on Saturday night. He partnered Guy Woodcock, who a few people will know in the UK. He's got, Gwyndaf Evans's old F2 Escort from 96 or 97, yep. I think maybe. But he was out with Ron, and he won with Ron Beercroft the MN Road Rally Championship in the 80s as well. So he was back out on Saturday, and unfortunately, they had some damage on the car, so they failed the damage check at the end of the event. But really nice to see John out, and he did tell me that he was looking at maybe doing a few more. So it'd be lovely to see him out again.
Fair play. Ryan Champion, I'm assuming your any other business could be Goodwood related.
funny, how
well,
did
that's
you
why
guess
I stayed
that
away
one?
From it. I thought I'm actually going to make life really easy for Rye this week, because if I do anything on Goodwood, then it's going to ruin his any other business. See the way I think here, mate. See how given I am.
Oh, thanks. Any other business is the Goodwood Festival of Speed. I mean, now I think officially the biggest motorsport event in the UK. It's also the British Motor Show, really, now an incredible event. Rallying well supported as part of that. So there is the gravel rally stage at the Festival of Speed, which I was driving my own Subaru on. Jari Matti Latvala was there representing WRC. He was the only WRC driver there this year, but he was there with a Polo, doing plenty of donuts and keeping the crowd entertained. And actually, the overall winner of the weekend. So there is a timed competition on the hill, the Tarmac Hill, and the driver that won that was Ollie Clark, son of Roger Clark, the man who put really rallying on the map in the UK. Ollie had his own rallying career, was part of the Seat Supers in the late 90s, did some world championship rallies in a Group N Mitsubishi as well, and he won that shootout in his incredible Subaru Gobstopper 2, as they call it, with somewhere in the region 850 horsepower. And if you haven't seen that, check it out on social media. His winning run was pretty
fair
epic.
Fair play. So are we done then, boys? Can I add
one more thing? We've got a one-page feature in MN this week that I really wanted to point out that I'd completely forgotten about. But David Evans, who many of you know is our rallies editor, rolled out the latest golf that's gone to the Chinese Rally Championship. He was actually the first person to drive it after it was completed. No one else had driven it. He was the first person. And after he rolled it out, Chris Atkinson went and won with it on the opening round of the Chinese Rally Championship. So it's a page in MN this week. Go and buy it and read it, because it's really cool. It's very, very different how cars are shaken down these days compared to maybe how they were 20 or 30 years ago. So I just wanted to point that out as well, please, if that's all right.
Yeah, you've done it, Jack. You've done it. It's all right. You don't have to say please, thank you, or kiss me bum or anything. You've done it. Good on you. I'm going to do my any other business now, boys. And it's not ranty or anything like that, but we had a very...
Smug?
smug? no, it's not smug. Mind you, it depends. You'd hear it. It's not what we say, it's what we hear, isn't it, at the end of the day, or what you hear, what I say. Something along those lines anyway. Scottish, very, very tough rally. And I take my hat off to the organisers on one hand, because I don't think they could have made it run any better up until probably about mid-afternoon. And then we had a massive delay where I think everybody who's doing the rally kind of switched off, and we were parked up for somewhere in the region of an hour and a half. We missed the stage, and then we were all sent into the last stage. And unfortunately, we weren't sent in any particular order. We were sent in any random order that we arrived, because we were in dead time. And I kind of think that kind of made a little bit of a mockery of this whole kind of seeded thing. I don't quite understand how it quite worked, because we were in dead time. So it was whoever turned up at the control, you just got fired in on, you know, at when you arrived, and all the seating was mixed up, and we had cars that shouldn't have been behind other cars and things like that, and people were caught, and yeah, it just made a little bit of a mockery, I felt, of the whole seated entry thing and performance related and things like that. A rally which I think we It didn't shock me in any way, shape or form. It was an incredibly rough rally. It was a typical Scottish rally. We had really, really nice weather in the morning, which made the stages a joy to drive. And then it got really horrible in the afternoon in the extensive. It got very, very warm. And then the stages were pretty much double use and they cut up. And I rode on my sump guard for quite a bit of those stages. And it made it quite a tough rally on our little car, it has to be said. But happy we finished. Happy we played the Joker, which Ryan didn't like. But it helped us after our indiscretion on the Pirelli. But yeah, I still think there's things that need to be looked at on these things anyway. But still, there you go. That was my any other business. But I completely and utterly, by the way, doff my cap to every single person and every single organizer, marshal that put up with those Miggies in Scotland.
Unbelievable, wasn't it? Oh my God.
I don't know whether it was my car's matte black, and at one point we had like a swarm around my car. And I said to Ian Bevan, my co-driver, have you had a wash this morning? And it turned out he had, and it was something to do with the colour of the car. It wasn't to do with his smell. But it was horrendous. And I can't remember which stage it was, but genuinely, I wasn't even going to mention this, but it's just come to me now. There was two arrival control marshals, two young ladies dressed as cowgirls with an inflatable cactus at the arrival. Now, I don't know whether I was having some kind of teenage acid flashback, but I have asked other people and that really did happen. And I have got no idea why they were there. And they didn't even mention it. That's what was brilliant about it. You know, sometimes when people say, we're doing this for charity or we're doing this for this or whatever, they didn't even break character. Nobody said a word and we just handed them the time card and they handed it back and they said, good luck. And I said, thank you very much. And we drove off and no reference was made to the fact that we were both dressed as cowgirls. So there you go. Anyway, that's it, boys. That's the end of another podcast.
Should we say one more thing before we go? We talked about quite a bit about jokers there, including you, Tony, yeah. Obviously. But the BRC jokers are being strongly looked at for next year, so keep an eye out over the next few weeks for some news on that, maybe, because I know they're definitely looking at how the jokers work, and they've sort of picked up on the same issues that we've talked about in the show quite a bit today, so they're something that are being looked at for next year's championship.
Right, okay. Providing they can put inflatable, you know what I'd need if I do the BRC next year, then, if they are taking the way like that way? Do you know when you go bowling, and when, for kids when they have bowling, they have those inflatable things that they put in the gullies so the ball doesn't fall into them? And it kind of, yep. I need them all the way through Kielder. If we could have them all the way through Kielder, I'll be fine, and I'll quite happily do the Pirelli again.
Ryan, you're a purist. What do you think of that suggestion?
I think Tony Simpson should just stay home.
I think Ryan, that you should drive Tony's car. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure Tony Simpson would agree.
And on that note, it's.
Sorry, Tony. We don't mean all this. We're not being horrible on purpose.
Yeah, you know, it's nice, isn't it? You know, it's just, yeah, anyway.
We're just getting it in because we know we'll get it back at some point. Yeah. So.
But if he does want to see it go fast, Jack, at any point, then I'm happy to do it.
Oh, that sounds like a challenge to me.
One word that comes to my head when I heard you say that then, Ryan.
Go on.
Right. Boys, same time, same place next week.
Thanks very much, Tony.
It's nice to have you at the end of the programme as well, Jack, as well as the beginning. So there you go. You see, I'm being nice. Same time, same place next week?
I was just going to say, will you be here?
Because you never know. You never know.
I'm definitely in the country. I'll not be here, as in I won't be at home, but I'll be in the country.
Right, folks, you know where we live by now. If you don't, it's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter. It's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Please keep sending bits and pieces in as you keep doing and keep tweeting us and getting involved. And if you've enjoyed the stuff that we've done, let us know, because we're always trying to get some idea of what you'd like and what you don't like. If you don't like a feature we've done, by all means, let us know. If you don't like me being smug, by all means, let me know, as that other gentleman did. Fair play to him. But anything, please get in contact and let us know what you think of the programme. And if you're so inclined, it would be lovely if you could go on iTunes and leave us a little bit of a review, albeit one star smug or something along those lines. But 5 stars would be lovely. And just keep spreading the word and keep spreading the love. And if you like it and you're into rallying and your friends into rallying and they haven't heard it, let them have a listen, see what they think. But I say same time, same place next week, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Absolute Rally, and thanks for the download. I'll speak to you next week.